today, depositors, shimozikas. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, World's Latest Post, covering finance and proper news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today I'm joined again by Steve from Canstar. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Martin.
Now, you've been picking over the coals with regard to what's happening to deposit rates, and I'm afraid that the story is just getting worse and worse, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's been a tough old couple of years for savers and self-funded retirees in particular. And we've seen, even before the Reserve Bank started moving in June, of 2019, we had seen a gradual fall in savings rates in particular, and that's continued, but on steroids, since the Reserve Bank started to move. So the Reserve Bank has gone down 75 basis points. The savers keep losing every time and have been since as well.
Yeah, and of course it started with the online rates that went through the floor, as you say, before the whole COVID situation. But even now, term deposits, which had a little peak up when the Reserve Bank started messing around, you know, and throwing liquidity in, but that's really faded away now. So even term deposits are pretty awful too.
Oh, they are. Look, the big banks, if you remember back to the mid-March emergency cut by the RBA, the big banks came out with a special package and they said, look, we'll take care of all stakeholders, including savers. And they did for 2 months.
Yeah.
So they gave away a 1.7, 1.75 12-month rate. That disappeared in 2 months. And it's back to business as usual. The best rate you can get for a 12-month TD now with the big guys is 1.10%. So that's business as usual.
Yeah, and if you think that, the CPI is significantly above that, essentially depositors are losing money month on month on month on month.
Yeah, we're not down to below zero interest rates, but the real interest rates are 0.5% plus below inflation. So, negative real rates.
Yeah, and what about some of the smaller guys, you know, and some of the neobanks? Because they were actually quite keen at one stage to grab deposits. That seems to have faded away as well.
Yeah, well, it has. We saw one of them actually withdraw from the deposit-taking business because they didn't have a lending business. Hard to make money when you're paying above market for deposits and you can't lend it out. So we saw that, and then we saw them have to drop their rates as well. Hard to maintain rates that are 1% above market, frankly. Macquarie Bank had they're not a neobank, of course. Macquarie Bank had the leading rate in savings accounts, 2.65. They've dropped significantly too. But they held that for a lot longer than I thought they would. So, yeah, people have fallen by the wayside, frankly. You can still, though, get a 1.7% maximum rate on a 12-month term deposit. So there are rates out there, and it's worth chasing for the extra 0.7% over and above what you can get with the big guys. So, it can get a reasonable rate in for this era.
Yeah, reasonable, I suppose, depends, as you say, on the era. And, the object lesson there is shop around and, you guys have some amazing lists of some of the top rates. So, go and have a look at Canstar and see what you can find. But there's a principal issue here, right, which is that, the banks are falling over themselves to try and offer cheap mortgages to try and get the mortgage business, right? But the collateral damage is being done to the deposit sector. And people need to understand there are more depositors than actually mortgage holders. So essentially, the pain is spread. And I know that the Reserve Bank has on several occasions said, it's better to try and lower the cost of borrowing. But the impact on savers, the impact on those retired, the impact on those who are relying on that income just to survive is pretty disturbing, isn't it?
Look, it is. If you're a self-funded retiree trying to live off savings accounts or term deposits, well, good luck, because you'll be living off principal. And you expect principal to run down in retirement, but you'll be living off mainly principal because, 1.7%, even if you're on the best rate, is not going to go very far. You need a big, fat deposit to actually fund that. So, you're right. It's spreading over a larger customer base, but nevertheless, this set of customers have been on the losing end now for about 2 years plus.
Yeah, and just to underscore that from my surveys, more than 3 million households rely on income from deposits, either, you know, totally or partially. So 3 million households essentially are just not getting the income. That's one reason why discretionary spending is way off, and why people are actually, if they've got any money, saving it rather than spending it. Because, of course, the expectation has to be that rates are going to stay in this very, very slow level, might even go even lower ahead. There's really nothing on the horizon to suggest that the rates would turn the other way anytime soon.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I think the Reserve Bank is looking at least 3 years before they can see us returning to near full employment. Now, I think that's probably a bit optimistic. I mean, we'll see the turnaround before then. Exactly. But we won't see full employment for a heck of a long time now. Mm. So 3 years before we could expect to see rates go up. And when you look at the bill rate, the swap rate, which is a wholesale rate for people who aren't familiar with it, that's fallen dramatically. It's fallen off a cliff. It's fell from the 180-day bill rate fell from 1.03 to now 0.17 in the first 5 months of this year. Now, that says that there is room for rates to fall further. And, you know, that sort of funding is, of course, competing with deposit taking. So I'm not being optimistic for people at all. The rates on deposits could fall further.
Yeah. And, you know, the fact is that whilst there is a 0.25% cash rate, the interbank rates, which you just touched on, are way lower. They're close to zero. In fact, I would say that, you know, as close to zero as they're going to be, unless the Reserve Bank goes into negative rate territory, which they denied they're going to. But I suspect there'll be some argument later about whether they should. Just, you know, again, to sort of help people understand, if you look at the UK post the global financial crisis, the banks took their deposit rates way down. And it's been a decade in the UK. And, you know, people with money in the UK on deposit are getting zero or close to zero. And essentially, it has forced people to do two things. One is to take higher risks, so to try and find other investment alternatives, but they're actually often much higher risk, and people then sometimes lose their shirts. Or they just hunker down and eat into capital. But as you said earlier on, you can do that for a period of time, but eventually, you know, if you eat into capital, you have nothing left, and then what do you do? So you're actually falling back onto government support. And, you know, that's the thing that people perhaps haven't got their head around, that the only way out of this is essentially people will run down their resources, run down their assets, and then turn to the government. This is a very, very, very tricky slope that we're on.
Look, it's an horrendous slope we're on. And you know, anyone who's already living on retirement savings, there's no comeback. You know, you're eroding your capital, in particular in your shares, when they're at rock bottom prices. I mean, the debate during the last election was about negative gearing, and negative gearing for people who weren't actually earning income, which is hard to get your head around, but it makes sense in a way. Now, that was there because there are a whole bunch of people that said, can't get enough for my term deposit, I've got to put it in the stock market. Now we saw a 30% fall on the market, albeit that's recovered some. And, you know, people are saying, well, that's not a great strategy either when I'm retired. So there's no real safe place for people to go. And if a lot of part pensioners end up on full pension, well, we shouldn't be surprised.
Absolutely. And, you know, even people were thinking until quite recent that superannuation might be a little bit of a safer option. But now you've seen, you know, all the issues there. And it's interesting, of course, because APRA came out today with the latest numbers, and another, you know, more people have taken money back out of super. But the point is, though, that if they're actually taking money out when the value of super is lower because of where the markets is, then the real impact of that is quite a lot higher on the value of superannuation. And so even the super sector, you know, is also now under the gun too. So there are no safe havens. It makes it very hard to know what to do. I mean, some people have said to me, well, maybe I'll just take the cash out of the bank and put it in a mattress, because at least it's not going to go backwards.
Well, I guess it does go backwards. Moss can eat it. But the fact is that, fortunately, the superannuation industry, the default fund that most people are in, is a balanced fund. So they haven't lost the full amount, the 30%, for example, that the market fell. Now, that's the good thing. But superannuation funds still fell around, 10% or something for the March quarter, with that big, when the market fell off a cliff.
Super funds will be balanced. They will have a mix of different elements there. But even there, the net returns are still going to be underwater. And my survey suggests that there are people who are considering retiring, right? And they're now saying, well, I'm going to have to work longer because I can't guarantee any of the sources of funds, whether it's superannuation, deposit accounts, or the stock market. I can't guarantee that that's going to be sufficient to be able to actually maintain my lifestyle to any extent in retirement. So these are becoming life-changing decisions for people. And I sometimes wonder whether the Reserve Bank and the people who set rates and things understand the real consequences on real people.
Yeah, look, I think they do. I think the Reserve Bank is very conscious of all this. However, everybody focuses on the home loan rate on that first Tuesday of the month when the RBA meets. And I'm sure the RBA does get a bit caught up and carried away with that. And it is just the one side of the equation. But I've tried to get in the past people interested in what's happening. Savings, quite often. And it just doesn't happen. It's the home loan rate, the headline home loan that interests people. Now, the Reserve Bank isn't really doing it anymore for home buyers. It's all about businesses investing and getting that stimulus, that environment where it doesn't cost them much to borrow, the cost of capital is low, they'll invest. Mm. But everyone focuses on the home loan. And, we want them focusing a little bit more on savings and helping out people who are retired and not drawing a pension.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've tried a few times to get the media interested in that side of the story because I think it's a story that's not well told, and yet it's hitting lots and lots of people. And this is
there's two of us, Martin, but that's not.
No, absolutely. It's amazing that 3 million plus people can essentially be silent. So it's a silent group. Hardly, doing anything and just rolling with it. So I think there's a bit of a call, I think, to make a bit more of a fuss, because frankly, unless people who are savers make a fuss, this is just going to go on and on.
Yeah, look, they are the forgotten group. Frankly, they're called the silent generation, aren't they?
They are.
And that's a shame because, although a lot of them are baby boomers now, but it's a shame because they're people who've actually have done the right thing. They put away money for their retirement and they're trying to self-fund it. And they're not a listen to enough section of the minority. They're a minority, but of the population, they're not heard enough.
And remember, of course, folks, you have a vote. So, use it, and make a fun. So, Steve, given the situation that we've got with deposits and the fact that, the deposit rates are being crushed, what are the sorts of things that people need to be thinking about?
Yeah. Look, you need to mix your portfolio of deposits. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but you need to. So you need to put a bit into term deposits and lock it away at 1.7% that you can still get. You need to, though, say, well, look, I can't touch that for 12 months. So set that aside. That's your longer-term money that sits there, which also says, look, I need a short-term place to leave money, to money that I'll be drawing on. Now, a bonus account can work, and you can earn a reasonable return on a bonus account up to 1.85%, but you can't withdraw the money with some of them. So you've got to make sure that you can meet the bonus conditions. Otherwise, you lose the interest for that month. So that can be part of the rest in place for the rest of your cash. Otherwise, you just have to go into an online savings account. You can get up to 2.26% on those at the moment, but that's only for 3 or 4 months. So then you've got to move the money to another institution. But that's the money for the short term, the immediacy of the next 12 months. So you've got to play a game like that. You've got to balance that, and you've got to be prepared to move money around every 3 or 4 months or make sure you get the bonus conditions. So it takes a lot more planning than it did in the past for retirees trying to work out how to make the best of their cash for the bank.
Mm, right. So you certainly can't set and forget. Unfortunately, it needs active management. And, there are tools out there and, websites that help. But it's certainly tricky. Unfortunately, there are no simple, straightforward or easy answers, are there?
There aren't, certainly. Look, I should also mention one other thing. Some people are surprised when they hear this still. there is a government guarantee with some of the smaller institutions. You should not feel nervous about going into an ADI, Australian Deposit Taking Institution, because the government guarantees up to $250,000. So because you haven't heard of a brand, if it's an ADI, and say Canstar's website, for example, we only list the ADIs for deposits and savings, feel comfortable that you can actually put your money there. You might be short of it for a few months while it sorts out, but we've never seen what actually happens. But the government is guaranteeing.
No, I think that's a really good point. The APRA lists all of the banks that are actually under the deposit scheme. And it is really important because, you know, you want to make sure that the organisation that you're with is protected up to that amount, so that effectively if anything were to go wrong, then you don't lose your shirt, as it were. And some of the smaller guys actually, in some cases, pay better rates than the big guys. And even if it's a brand you haven't necessarily heard of, it's still worth looking at.
Yeah. The smaller institutions and the sort of second tier of banks always pay more than the big guys when it comes to savings and deposits.
So really, the bottom line is shop around.
Exactly.
How many times have we said that, Steve, eh?
Plenty of times, Martin.
And the final point, just have you had any tracking of reverse mortgages? I mean, I have now got in my surveys some evidence that more people now are being forced into essentially remortgaging their property in a reverse mortgage sense to be able to create an income because that's the only asset they've got.
Yeah, look, it is. There are a lot of people, that's the asset. They had savings, they've been eroding those, and that's the only asset. And in a sense, they are a wealth group. They have, they're cash poor, but they're asset rich. They're sitting in a property worth $700,000. Now, if you're in a property that's $700,000, you can reverse mortgage. You can borrow 15-20% of that, and that will supplement your living. So it's not a terrible strategy. It's not perfect, but all of your family, everyone needs to understand the repercussions, because interest capitalizes the amount you owe, and it grows. And you're hoping that the house value will grow with it. If house properties start to stagnate a little bit, house prices stagnate a little bit, well, frankly, you will be eroding capital in your house and less will be passed on to the next generation. If you need to go into a retirement home, a nursing home, you need to be pretty comfortable that you're going to have enough left in deposit to actually get into your place of choice. So there are some traps in it, there's some problems in it, but I get why people resort to it. The rates are higher than home loan rates and haven't come down anywhere near as much. That's not surprising because it's not that the risk is particularly higher, but it's harder to fund that. They've got the lender has no cash flow until people retire. So rates have to be higher.
Yeah, and you know, I've always said to people, go into it with your eyes open, because there are traps for the unwary. I mean, there are some protections, because essentially now, if a reverse mortgage is sold, they can't, you know, foreclose on you early until you sell the property. But at the point you sell the property, then the whole thing crystallizes. And as you say, if property prices haven't gone up and you've been eating into the capital, then you could be left with a rather nasty mess at that point. So people should be quite cautious.
Yeah, well, of course, you can never owe more than the value that the property realizes. That's the law these days, and it's a good protection. But if people are expecting to pass on a house worth $700,000 when they go, well, that won't happen anymore unless property values do keep pace, and they might not. You know, it's a cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, unfortunately, my modelling is suggesting there's very little upside for house property prices over the next 2 to 5 years, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Steve, I appreciate your time today, and I think this is a really, really important subject, so I'm glad we've been able to discuss it. Perhaps we should chat again down the tracks and pick another sector of the market and explore that in a bit more detail, because I think these conversations are actually very important. Thank you very much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Great chatting.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye.
Cheers.